and welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Tina Pagato returns. She is the Chief Executive Officer for the Bethesda Project, here in Philadelphia, and Charisma Goldston. She is the Director of Shelter. Ladies, thank you for coming on today. Thank you.
We're thrilled to be here. Thanks for having us, Laura.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yes. For someone who's unfamiliar with Bethesda Project, and I understand this is a 45th anniversary year, is it?
It is.
45 years of vital services to people in genuine need. So here's where I say, well, give us that explanation of what is Bethesda.
I'm so happy to do so. So Bethesda Project was founded in 1979. We have faith-based roots. We were founded by a prayer group at Dalesford Abbey out in Paoli, and it was led by Father Dominic Rossi. Members of that prayer group helped care for a group of formerly homeless women who were actively mentally ill, who were living in an apartment in Center City. The group that had been covering the rent and caring for them were no longer able to do it, and they reached out to this group to ask if they would get involved. So they started caring for them like you would care for a family member. And in 1983, they purchased and rehabbed our very first property at 11th and Spruce and moved the women from that apartment into 16 units of permanent housing at that property. They were total amateurs at low-income housing development. They were not trained social workers, but it turned out they had a model that was really successful. And that model grew into the mission of Bethesda Project, which is to find and care for the abandoned poor and to be family with those who have none. They really approached the work as if they were caring for someone in their own family, using a lot of compassion, patience, care. And over time, that volunteer-led initiative really grew, and they started expanding, acquiring more properties. And we fully incorporated as a 501c3 nonprofit, started professionalizing, and hired staff. That being said, the importance of volunteerism has really stayed with us throughout our 45 years, and we can talk a little bit more about that. Kind of looking at us today, we have 11 different unique sites and programs throughout Center City, Philadelphia. We have about 120 staff. We have a budget of approximately $6 million. So we've really grown from a very small volunteer-led group into a professional nonprofit organization.
Well, we're going to brag and talk about your staff in a few minutes. And of course, volunteerism is the heart of a lot of these organizations. But let's talk a little bit more about the need. And you're talking about people who are genuinely alone. You're dealing with people who are living alone on the streets.
That's correct. So it's a good segue. The population that we target to work with, they are single adults. So we don't welcome families into our sites. We really leave that to our peer pros who are expert at working with families and children. We focus on single adults who have experienced chronic homelessness. So they've been on the streets for a long period of time. And along with that comes a disabling condition. So that could be a serious and persistent mental health diagnosis. It could be a substance abuse diagnosis. It could also be very complex medical conditions. Oftentimes, it's sort of a combination of those three things, and they're experiencing true vulnerability. So our priority is to bring the folks indoors who have been on the streets the longest with the most vulnerabilities, because the longer they're on the streets, the greater the risk of death.
And the greater the risk of additional issues that are going to arise. Do you want to talk a little bit about, I know you have emergency shelter, but then you also do supportive housing as well. And you talked about getting, your original clientele, those women ended up in permanent housing. What's the ultimate goal for these folk that come into your care?
Well, I'll start that question and then I'm going to queue up charisma. So ultimately, we've got sort of three different arms of programming. We've got entry-level programs, then our large shelter program that Charisma operates in conjunction with the City of Philadelphia, and then supportive housing. So in short, the goal at entry level and our large emergency shelter is to meet immediate basic needs, encourage people to come indoors, and help them secure, a next step in their housing process. So whether that's some kind of treatment program or a safe haven or permanent housing or housing in the private market, we're working to help them secure that housing. On the supportive housing side, we're working to help people maintain their stable housing. We really believe that maintaining housing stability is the best type of homelessness prevention. So it's either working to get people housed or working to keep them housed. So I want to kind of cue Charisma up now to talk a little bit more in depth about the work that's being done at our Brother's Place, our large emergency shelter.
Charisma?
Thank you, Tina. I really appreciate it. And again, thank you for having us this morning. So as stated, I'm the director of shelter with Bethesda Project at our Brother's Place. It is our largest men's shelter. We serve about 149 guests on a nightly basis. These are individuals that actually come in to our shelter and have a dedicated bed. As we're in the winter season, we're in code blue, and we up those numbers to accommodate these really cold, really dangerous temperatures for, and really support Philadelphians, getting them off the street into a warm place. We do have a pretty unique approach to how we welcome people. The first thing that we do when we welcome you into our program is we really like find out who you are, what's your name. We really seek to make you comfortable. We really look at our roots. And we pull to our mission. So part of our mission is being family to those that have none, means that we're actually bridging these relationships and making these connections right from the door. So individuals not only feel comfortable coming in, but it really transforms what shelter means for many individuals that could be a scary next step. We're finding individuals that are newer to shelter, never been in shelter before. Due to the pandemic, they're now finding themselves experiencing homelessness a couple years out from the pandemic. And we really shift what shelter means, not an institutional setting, but a setting where you could find your family members. You find friends that you actually hang out and look out for each other. And then you have staff that are not only interested in meeting your basic needs, but we're invested to support those needs, right? So we at the shelter, we will give you clothing. We provide fresh clothing for individuals that are seeking it. We are so mindful about meal services for individuals that could have like a food insecurity. So we seek to make sure that our meals are nutritious, they're healthy. We serve them 3 days a week, sorry, 3 meals a day, 7 days a week. There are no breaks for holiday because just because it's holiday does not mean that people stop needing shelter services or deserve any less service delivery. We have a really unique social services team. It's a pretty large team. And we really look to pair our guests in our program with the right case manager to increase the success in our program. When you have a case manager that may have similar interests as you, like even an art interest, you're more likely to stay because you know, wait, although I'm experiencing this trauma, there's more to life than just this as a focus. And we really reinforce that housing is the end goal. For some people, it could be a long-term medical facility, and we're having those really challenging conversations. But our goal when you walk in through our door is to really ensure that you feel safe, you feel heard, you're seen as an individual, you're treated as an individual, and we're seeking housing services long-term to match that so you don't return back into homelessness. And we connect you with supports in the community so you know how to ask for help in the future. You're not by yourself. That could be a long-term case manager or just showing people where to go and how to ask for help in the future so they don't find themselves back into homelessness. But they have to come back to ask a question. We're open to the public every day from 11 to 1. And we've had people move out successfully. And they'll come back and say, hey, I have this document. could you help me? And we keep the door open. And we call our people in our program guests, because it's a hotel feel. We want you to know that it's temporary, and we treat you like it's a hotel. We treat you like it's a welcoming environment, because it is.
Now, you work this project. Our Brother's Place is worked with the city of Philadelphia. So this is based on immediate need. I am homeless. I have no shelter tonight. Versus the other, your other programming, which is long term with social issues that have to be addressed as well. So this could be someone who has been living in a car, or is homeless, or has lost a place. It's not a chronic situation even.
Yeah, we are often finding that there are many guests. You know, we like to say there's 1,000 reasons why people enter into shelter. And we do have some individuals that have been chronically homeless. They're on the street. They're finally say, hey, I'm ready to come in now. And I trust the work that you all have done. My friend talked about you, and I heard about this program, and I want to come in. But we're also finding people that are sleeping in their cars, and it gets really cold, and they recognize the danger of, you know, that kind of pseudo homelessness and being on the street in their car. We're also finding youth, people that are like right at 18, who are, you know, either aging out of the foster care system, or they've just had a pretty significant family incident and they can't go back to their family home. Fires. We've had even just you have a medical event at the hospital, and you had a stroke and you find yourself experiencing homelessness because no one could pay your rent. So we're seeing a pretty diverse mix of individuals, but we're often finding it that a lot of the people that we're serving are, I have nowhere to stay today. I don't know where I'm staying 5 minutes from now. I don't know where my next meal is coming from. Or even I don't have anywhere safe to be, and I'm hoping this place could help me.
You said the word finally. I'm finally ready to come in. And I know mm-hmm. that's a big issue, especially with the other programming, building that trust when they walk through the door. Yes, but it's encouraging them come to that door to begin with. And getting someone to stay, especially if you're dealing with mental illness or addiction, other issues that are impacting the reason why they are out on the street.
Yeah, that is something where when we have individuals who've been long-term street homeless that make that decision to come into shelter and trust us, we often find that to be the biggest win. And we're so intentional about how we address individuals who are facing that, because we recognize the challenges of severe mental health or even drug addiction. And we recognize that that is not something or that's appropriate to ever judge that person. So we welcome them in with no expectation. We are low barrier organization. We believe in housing first, in the housing first model, and we apply that across all of our sites. So when folks come in, we don't have these expectations that could be really unrealistic. We just have the expectation that you come in and you're open to the help that we're able to give you, but we meet you where you are and we go from there. Right? We don't just meet you and we stay there. We really work with you to support you, to move you along. And that might include asking that individual, what do you think is the next best step? And really have them take that lead to actually build that trusting relationship. And truth be told, sometimes a lot of it is, you know, when guests come in for meal service, they were like, you helped me that one time. I really appreciated it. And we're like, that is great. We're having a newer, younger population of people that are hard of hearing or non-hearing. And that's a really tight-knit community, especially of individuals who are experiencing homelessness. And it's only taken a couple guys who are like, oh, this guy had this really good experience. I told my friend about you. And it's like word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And the guests who are hard of hearing or non-hearing recognize that the staff are trying their hardest to bridge that communication. And we don't use that as a barrier for any service delivery. We adapt. And that is something, when I say finally, it's people say, hey, they've adapted. This is a really good spot. This is a really good place to be. And we really reinforce those relationships and those connections and those habits, so people know when they're coming through our doors and they're experiencing the Bethesda Project for the first time, that this is our typical norm of operation and not something that's unique.
You kind of jumped on my next question because you said that, no, I'm happy about it. I'm thrilled with it. You mentioned that next step, and that was, I jotted that down when Tina mentioned it earlier, that your self-agency, investment in yourself here, they are involved in taking these next steps, and that investment helps towards ultimate goal achievement.
Yeah, so there's a lot of micro next steps to get housing, which can be really hard if you're doing it alone. And what we do within the organization is really break those steps to be more manageable. We have a great partnership with the Homeless Advocacy Project several years ago. They worked to ensure that shelters were able to apply for birth certificates independently of the legal aid, which has really helped individuals get birth certificates for the first time, which then you get a social security card, which is easier to get a state ID. And we make sure the names match because we move on to housing. That becomes really important. And the Office of Homeless Services, the support that they offer us, it's really advocating for individuals who are experiencing homelessness, reduces barriers. Our Brother's Place on our Oxford location as well, we have a savings program, and we really encourage our guests to save. We know that savings can make moving in on your own extremely successful. And we have a pretty high success rate. We show guests that you're able to save, you're able to kind of make those next steps, and that can seem impossible. We break down bills, break down budgets. Our case managers are trained to also talk about budgets and talk about addiction and really have some honest conversation where guests recognize that they're the whole person. Because ultimately the goal is housing, and we recognize how challenging the housing market is. There's just a lack of affordable housing, lack of inventory, and quite frankly, high rent just is not sustainable. We've even had really successful partnerships where we've encouraged guests who are really good friends, who have similar interests, to think about moving in together. And we've had guests move in together and it be wildly successful. They were able to afford a better unit, better neighborhood, for a fraction of the price because now you're splitting your utilities and your rent. So the next step is yes, housing, but also recognizing the full person, which could include supporting them with both medical services and mental health care, and really bridging that connection and doing warm handoffs when that happens so people feel safe and they're like, oh, I trust this person because the person I trusted in shelter has gone with me. And, you know, pandemic is still, I know we're a couple years removed from it, but there are some serious effects of it that we're still seeing to this day. We have individuals that are recently homeless and they were really making it work and they just have never kind of got their footing. And they're experiencing homelessness because of it.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about these supportive services that you have. And here I mentioned earlier, let's talk about the staff. Who is caring for your clients in both situations?
So I'll start just by kind of talking about two core pieces of programming that really lead to successful outcomes for the people that we serve. This is within our entry-level emergency shelter and supportive housing sites. So the first is case management at all of our sites. So we've got case managers, they're called engagement specialists at our large shelter, but they are really on site, ready to go, working on the relationship building, using housing-focused case management, really applying strategies of harm reduction, trauma-informed care, and they're assisting guests and residents in a really individualized way. Charisma did a great job describing some of the very immediate basic needs that we see in shelter, kind of connecting people to needed services, working to get the documentation they'll need for the next leg of their journey, helping them find appropriate housing. But they're also there to assist guests and residents with building personal relationships. They might be helping to connect them with family members that have become estranged. They're working on financial issues, helping resolve personal crises. They're connecting them to income through entitlement programs, teaching life skills. We call them activities of daily living, helping them relearn or gain new skills that really help them get ready for more self-sufficient, independent living once they move on to the next step. And they're also assisting them with monitoring their medication regimen, connecting them to community partners, so that once they leave one of the Bethesda Project locations, they still have a support network out in the community to help meet those needs. So that's kind of part one, the case management that happens. We also have shelter staff and residential aides that are on site 24/7 to assist and fill in those gaps and really be present and meet those real-time needs as they're arising. The second big component is what we call community life. We have a community life department, and they do a lot of work with our volunteers, so community engagement opportunities. They're working to bring those volunteers into Bethesda Project shelters and housing residences on an ongoing basis. And they're helping us with that family piece of our mission by really coming in and being part of the work that we do. They're helping to celebrate milestones there and holidays. They're creating opportunities for fun and recreation. They're building friendships with people. And they really just provide an opportunity to be present and build relationships on the person-to-person level. They're also doing things that really help our bottom line kind of financially. So they're cooking and preparing meals. They're doing maintenance projects. They might be painting or repairing things. And they're also organizing things for us off-site. So oftentimes volunteers will host in-kind drives on our behalf in their workplace. They'll put a bin and ask for winter items to help people within our programs. Or they will, have a celebration and invite their guests to make a small donation to support the work of Bethesda Project in lieu of bringing gifts. So we really do have kind of these core pieces that really help build the sense of community within our locations that sort of amplify the hard work that our guests and residents are doing on their own. We're there to help them walk alongside and do it with them.
What is the participation level of a guest in all of this process? When are they interacting with the volunteers to help put on these events? Are they sharing meals? Are they going out into public events with them, et cetera? I mean, how do they get involved in this hands-on?
Our guests love interacting across the entire organization with volunteers. I think for many of our guests, it isn't just they're just receiving this, but it's a two-way often relationship where volunteers, especially if they're newer to the organization, are able to kind of get to know people at a different level. And guests that have been in our organization really look forward to seeing a smiling face. We have some of the best volunteers. I'm very biased. I will always say that. But we do. We have volunteers that, they continuously give to our guests. They think about us in, the summer. We often say the winter is during the season of Christmas and, other holidays people give. But we have a great picnic and our guests absolutely love going. They get to spend time with volunteers. Volunteers know them by name. They know volunteers by name. Some of our relationships with volunteers have been going on for decades. And it could be a meal delivery. We've had a board member who for years, decades nearly, would serve Break Breakfast Wednesday, and it's a large meal. And he'd be like on the grill serving and making eggs for like hours, So part of it is meal service. Some of it's just fun activities like bingo, game day. They support us during holidays. They come serve meals during holidays. They're giving gift cards for the holidays. And sometimes it really is just relationship building. We've had at some of our sites, you have residents that might have a harder time going in the community. And we have such patient, dedicated volunteers that would say, hey, I'll go food shopping with you. I'll take you. And they're able to kind of bridge that relationship. And for many of our guests and residents, it's way to have a healthy relationship with other peers, with other individuals. And for volunteers, they just love to do it. And we love supporting them.
And you have a young volunteers organization, I believe. And then what are you looking for in a volunteer? And then you know what you've got. You do have annual fundraisers. You've got a big party and auction every May at the end of this month. This is mid January at this point. You have a 45th anniversary dinner coming up as well. And of course, you'll find more information about that. Everything we talk about, by the way, at BethesdaProject.org. Jump in there and tell us about how we get involved.
I am so happy to tell you that. So first, it is my job, and I would be remiss if I didn't say it. We need money to continue doing what we're doing. So we always value financial support, and we make it really easy for you to support us financially on our website. You can find all the different ways to support us financially. But beyond donations, financial donations, we do take lots of in-kind donations as well, which are equally valued, and you can find a list of things that are constant needs for us. We also have an Amazon wish list, which can make it a little easier for some people to kind of purchase something that is a high needs item and have it shipped right to Bethesda Project. Then there's the service volunteerism that we talked about. That is great for individuals, for families, for groups, for corporate organization or corporate entities. It could be a one-time day of service. It could be a 1 hour a week service. Whatever your needs are and how you want to give, we will work with you to find the right fit. You referenced our Young Professionals Advisory Board. This is a group of young professionals in Philadelphia who are really passionate about Bethesda Project and being involved in solutions to end homelessness in our community. They are such a passionate and exciting group to help spread awareness and raise funds for the organization. They put on a series of events throughout the year as well. They do an annual pumpkin carving around Halloween, which is a lot of fun, at the PHS pop-up garden. They also do several happy hours throughout the year, and along with that will be a raffle where you can purchase tickets and win some items.
You have, we can find out more information about the big dinner on the 31st at your website.
Yes, there are still tickets available. It's at Dalesford Abbey, which is the birthplace of Bethesda Project. And it's a unique opportunity to hear from myself as well as our founder through an intimate conversation and a dinner.
Ladies, I am so sorry to say this. We are out of time. Parting words?
Please call and share the homeless outreach number. If you see someone struggling on the street, especially in the cold temperatures or inclement weather, the number is 215-232-1984, and they will often transport individuals that you see on the street into a shelter. And our shelters, like Tina said, are open 24/7. Again, advocate in your community. Please talk about homelessness. It's very important and it impacts all of us.
Tina?
I think my parting words would be that the average person really is bothered when they see someone experiencing homelessness or when someone's asking you for help and you don't know how to help. Getting involved with an organization that has real solutions to ending someone's homelessness is a way that you can really be part of transforming lives. So if you've been struggling to figure out how to help and get involved, come and join the family at Bethesda Project and find the way to support that feels right to you.
Of course, for everything that we have been talking about today, I just mentioned it, go to BethesdaProject.org. BethesdaProject.org will tell you more about how you can volunteer, more about the in-kind donations. There are events that are coming up, whether it's the young professionals throughout the year, their 45th anniversary dinner coming up at Dalesford Abbey on the 31st, or their big party and auction, their annual soiree in May. You can find out more about how you can get involved. BethesdaProject.org. And again, my guest today, Tina Pagotto, she is the Chief Executive Officer, and Charisma Goldston, Director of Shelter at Bethesda Project. BethesdaProject.org. Ladies, thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you. This has been lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Such an honor. Thank you so much.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.